63rd meeting of the Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Weingart. I live in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County.
John Schweier, Morris County Freeholder.
Tim Dillingham, I'm a public member of the commission.
Amy Letts from Precipity in Morris County.
Elizabeth Calabrese, Gordon County Freeholder.
Bill Cocker, Mayor of Chester Township.
Janice Kovach, Tom Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Glenn Petrano, Sussex County Freeholder.
Tracy Carluccio, Public Representative, Hunterdon County.
Debbie Pasquarelli, Greenwich Township, Warren County Representative.
Kurt Olstead, Public Member, Chester Township.
And on the phone we have?
Felicia White, Passaic County Freeholder.
This meeting has been advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. All who wish, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do not yet have minutes from our meeting. It was 1 week ago, so we will get to consider them at a subsequent meeting. And I have nothing in the chairman's report to report from over the last 7 days. Other council members have any items to report at this time? Then we will turn to the executive director's report.
Thank you. Good afternoon, all. It's only been a week since we last saw you, so I'm not really going to give you a report of what we've been up to. I will assure you we have been very busy. Part of it, of course, has been preparing for this meeting. I want to give you a status, as per your request, of where we are with the public comments and next steps. To date, we have taken in all the comments. They have been scanned and put into the system. All the comments from the three public hearings have already been broken out into the different categories. I'll be sending you an email tomorrow so that you'll be able to start reviewing those. So already you'll be able to go in and see who spoke at each of the three public hearings and what categories their comments went into. And you can search and look at it that way. So I'll have that ready for you. We continue then to keep working on this database to the point where we'll have it available for all public to see as well, but obviously it's an ongoing process. Public comment period closed on the 28th, and our total of comments received. In email, we've received 288 altogether. Now, of the comments received through the email, 14 were late, but when we looked, we did a sort of a research because one of the people who had submitted comments via email sent me an email over the weekend to say that they had sent them in on the 28th. So Matt over the weekend looked at the Microsoft headers and was able to send me a listing. And so we were able to see that three of those indeed had sent them on the 28th. And for some reason the system was, it took a while for them to get into the system, but obviously they were accepted. There were also others that were duplicates and a couple that were sent in error. So we ended up with only 7 of those being late. So a total of 288, 7 of which were late. Those late comments are still reviewed and considered, and in fact I have read all of the late comments that were received. By mail we received 114, 2 of which were late after the date. In the public hearings, the public hearing on February 6th, 41 people spoke, 19 submitted written comments as well. On the 11th, 33 spoke and 11 submitted written comments. And on February 13th, 52 spoke and 20 submitted written comments. And we look both at the written comments and what they've said at those meetings because sometimes there are differences. So we think it's important to make sure we look at both. So, and then we have total comments received on time, 482. Total comments received late, 9. Now, when I said 482, please be aware that some of those are duplicates. And then what we did is we just looked at who we received them from. And just to give you some idea, from counties and municipalities, we received 52 comments. From groups and organizations, about 300, and from individuals regarding specific properties, etc., 130. So that gives you an idea then of the scale of what we're looking at here.
And when you say comments, this is a letter or a testimony that might include comments on multiple sections of the draft.
Yes, letters, email, and comments at the public hearings. What staff are doing now is continuing to work on all those that have been scanned into the system, so we have a record of every one of them, and we're dividing up the staff to look at them then and categorize them so that they'll be ready in a document just as we prepared for 2006, so that you'll be able to search under who commented, what the category was, etc. So I haven't got a date for you, but at your next meeting I'll be able to tell you whether it's completed or at what point it will be completed. We're certainly working hard, and we're dedicating a day next week for all the staff that are involved in this process to spend that day working on it. After that, what we'll be doing is pulling out different comments we receive and getting that ready to deliver to you, just as I did at the last meeting where I talked about the issues where we find that most of the comments are on, so that we'll be able to look at those issues, bring them back to you, and we'll do some work in the meantime, though, knowing some of those issues and knowing that you've commented on them to us, and then get your direction on how you want to see changes reflected in the final plan. Okay, on scenic resource nomination procedures.
Excuse me, can I ask a question at this point? My question concerns, are we getting comments on the TDR receiving areas? But really I have a question first about, when did we release the TDR receiving map so that people could have an opportunity? And the reason I'm asking this is I'm getting a lot of comments, even in my own tower looking at things. We all know there's some ground truthing that needs to be done, but I'm getting the impression that it's going to be a significant matter. Some of the issues related to the identification of these TDR areas, for example, cemeteries, schools, tennis courts. And I know the staff is aware of some of these. They may not be aware, as we are hearing from people, the extent of the potential conflicts. So where does that fit in? You know, are we getting comments about this, or did we just release the data? I've lost track of the timing.
The map was part of the release in the final draft November 19th release.
Okay.
So it's in there now. I can't give you the exact date, but we would have talked about it prior to that at one of those.
That's fine. Just so it wasn't, I just lost track again whether we only a couple weeks ago released it or it was part of that. And I know we'll have a discussion at some point about public comments, but I want to bring that up now since we are in a timeline and trying to. I think we're going to need to do some analysis, some quantitative analysis of those parcels.
Right.
And I'm not sure exactly how we do it, but again, I'm getting the impression just from looking at towns in my area that it could be as much as 60-70% there's conflicts on these parcels that have been identified. Now, don't take that to the bank, that's just my eyeballing it. But I think rather than waiting till a much later date, if possible, maybe get started on doing something with that. So categorize, what's happened and maybe adjust the model or whatever.
And I think the important thing to note is that we have not mapped TDR receiving areas. What we've done is a GIS-based analysis to look at a four-step process to getting to the
potential.
I believe it's the fourth level, which is where there's actually capacity within the systems of potable water and wastewater. So until you get to that level, you don't actually have infrastructure available and capacity within the system. And even at that point, we haven't done the resource assessment and the ground truthing that you talk about. But as it was mandated by the Act, to do a mapping and to get to, I believe it was 4% of the planning area, had to be shown as potential. But two things, the whole process is voluntary, so it relies on municipal interest, and then it has to go, then you may look at that mapping as a place to start, but nothing more than that. And then once you get to that point, if there's an interest from the municipality, that's why we have the feasibility grants, because then you have to look at the resource assessment and to see if there's capacity to actually consider taking on TDR. So that it's just the very first step. But I appreciate what you're saying, Debbie, and what we said at the last meeting was we believe that we need to better clarify all the steps in front of that map, so the map isn't sitting out there on its own looking like it's actually receiving areas, instead of setting forth the process and saying that all it is a place to start to look.
Debbie, if you don't mind me adding, just because I was part of that analysis, in the technical addenda, there's a 6-page description of the process that we followed to arrive at those areas that we identified as potential. And as Eileen correctly described, it's a 4-level analysis as you work from level 1 to level 4, level 4 being that which actually has both sewer and water supply capacity. But we were very specific in our explanation as to what we looked at, the process that we followed. So for those people that do have specific questions, well, how did you arrive at your level one analysis or level two, three, or four? It is explained in that portion of the technical addenda, which is part of the final draft that was released. So that's separate and apart from just the map and the description of some of the receiving zones that you see in the TDR program section in the final draft RMP.
And so if you're a municipality and you have an applicant come before a land use board and decree, oh, well, this parcel here, this is identified as a TDR receiving area, you have to agree to this upzoning. What do we refer them to clarify that? Another technical document?
I would refer them to I think it begins on page 83 of the technical addenda, but I would refer them to the process that we identified there. And again, the most important point being that these will be identified by the municipality. We wanted to at least start the conversation, which is why we presented this information in the final draft. The municipality is going to look at that information, ground truth it, as many of the people that you've spoken to have already done that. But then eventually it comes back to the council for a complete and full designation process. So it's not simply because we said this is a potential area that it has to be done as so. Our receiving zones are voluntary. So.
And I'm making the point that we all understand that.
And you'll see.
Municipal officials don't. Mm-hmm. And those who do understand it will attempt to misconstrue that.
Understood. And I would, again, cite everyone to that, you know, 6 or 7 page discussion in the technical addenda.
Technical addenda to the what?
To the final draft plan. So if you go to the website, go to the final draft, you'll see that the technical addenda is listed there as a link. And I believe it begins on page 83. It's a 6 or 7 page discussion with the map.
Thank you.
But the important point, and an important point in there, which I think you both just said, is that even if the information is entirely accurate about a specific site, a town can still opt in, can be in conformance with the plan while slating that site for preservation or for whatever.
Correct.
It's not.
Thank you.
The next two issues, and I could roll these into one if you'd allow it, and that is the scenic resource nomination procedures and the redevelopment procedures. We did receive back comments on those, and part of the redevelopment procedure was the method that was put forth for calculating the impervious surface in order to get to that redevelopment process. And to update you on that, because you asked for this at the last meeting, we received comments from 8 organizations or individuals on the impervious surface method, with many of the issues that have been raised here and that you have concerns with. The concept of identifying vegetated areas as impervious surfaces was one of the comments raised, outlining all alternative methods so that if any other methods are used, that they should be defined in the procedures. Looking at the TR-55 methodology, and there was much conversation about soil classification and how that should be treated. Some comments suggested that some surfaces will be considered impervious for redevelopment, but not for limits on new development. So they felt there was some inconsistency there. And there were some other miscellaneous comments, such as adjacent properties should not be considered in the method, and some talk about what kind of storm you use, whether it's the 1.25-inch water quality storm or the 2-year storm instead of that. So we received those comments, and what we'd like to ask you to consider doing is putting those comments in with the comments received on the redevelopment procedures, putting all of them together, and then, because you had some concerns about giving an extended comment period, that we could put them out for an extended comment period for 30 days, but together, because we think it's important that the whole process is viewed, not pulling one part out of it, because just as we have these concerns about TDR receiving areas, it's important that the whole process is viewed, so that people see that the different steps, that there is resource protection, and there's an analysis that has to happen for that in each of these procedures. So for both scenic and redevelopment, we'd like to consider those comments, rewrite the procedures, and put them out for 30-day comment period, then bring them back to the council. And our concept in bringing them back to the council as well was to take a project and show how the process would work from beginning to end, including the impervious surface calculation methodology.
Any objection to that? good plan.
My concern, Mr. Chairman, is we had some fairly lengthy conversations about this. It sounds like, and I apologize for missing the last half of the conversation last week. I just want to make sure the council dedicates enough time to work through all those issues. And at a full council meeting, we usually have a full agenda. I think we had originally talked about staying active with the resource committee after the public comment again together. And I'm getting more and more reluctant to put more work for myself and her father. It sounds like there's a fair amount of debate, a fair amount of discussion that has to happen.
I think the chair at the last meeting had suggested, and I don't know if you heard that part of the conversation, Tim, that everybody come today with calendars and be prepared to add meetings. Because I believe you're right. I think that given the kind of things we'll be doing at these next meetings as we look at various issues, that this may need a dedicated meeting just to go over those issues.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Our next scheduled meeting after today is March 27th at 10, but we are going to need to schedule other meetings. I don't think the best way to do that is sitting around a table, but I think you should all try to hold as many open, all the open Thursdays you have at this point, hold them, and the Interpol will all be in touch with all of us over the next couple of days, and hopefully add them to more meetings so we can deal with that and all the comment issues. I also wanted to acknowledge Eric Peterson, who's joined us since we began, and Eric Tahitian Way is on the phone.
Okay. Thank you. The next matter I just bring to your attention is I did in your packet supply you with a draft letter to COA regarding third round regulations. And we did give sort of the issues we set those forth so that the public could see the kind of things we were considering. Tom had prepared this letter and had done, I believe, a very thorough job of looking at the rules and at the Highlands Act and looking at the kind of cooperation that should be between us and making suggestions in a letter to COA, which has to be down to them before March 22nd, suggestions for including the regional master plan, a suggestion perhaps that they incorporate by reference, but then reminding them again of the obligation to consider the regional master plan in terms of their third round obligations. So what we were hoping to get from you today was if everybody had a chance to review this and are satisfied with it, that we would put it in final form and send it down to COA before the date.
Anybody have any comments on that? It's not a letter we have to approve, but if there are any comments or suggestions at this point.
Mr. Chairman, I did speak with the executive director about this, and we discussed this issue before regarding COA and TDR, and that is that if we want towns to increase their density in order to be a receiving area, and then you overlay that with the COA requirements, this might become very difficult for us. And I think that we should be including these concerns in our communications with COA.
And the last bullet on the issues document that the public have does refer to that. And I could read, the Highlands Act requires the Highlands Council to create a transfer development rights program for the Highlands region, which includes a program of benefits for voluntary receiving zones. COA should consider an amendment that recognizes that the additional units created through the Highlands TDR program in a receiving zone provide for land preservation in Highlands sending zones and thus serve a public purpose. Accordingly, COA should consider that these additional units do not trigger growth share obligations.
Thank you, Adam.
Other comments on that?
Okay, thank you. The next part of my memo really just outlines the rest of this agenda, but just to bring you up to date on meetings that we've had since we've last seen you, it shows you where my head is. We did have an informational meeting on March 4th, the evening of March 4th with, it was the town of Clinton with their planning board. And upcoming meetings, just so as you know, March 8th, which is this Saturday, I'll be doing a presentation at the New Jersey Conservation Foundation's Land Trust Rally. March 10th in the evening is a Mountain Lakes informational meeting, March 12th in the evening Mendham Borough informational meeting, and March 18th Chester Township an informational meeting. And these meetings, I've said time and time again, are proving to be invaluable to us. It's the starting point of a communication between your staff and these the municipalities. And questions such as Debbie had posed about TDR are always asked of us at those meetings, and indeed it was the case just recently in town of Clinton. And we're getting more interest as well into the in the grant for TDR receiving areas for that feasibility study when we go out to these informational meetings. So I like to say that publicly because to encourage those from, you know, people from the public, to encourage your municipalities to ask us to come out. We'll do it more than once, but it certainly is beneficial. And that, Mr. Chair, is the end of my report.
Any questions? We don't have any committee reports today. I'm going to suggest that we switch items 9 and 10 and talk first about the Pinnacle project and then the Roxbury project. That's okay. And so starting with that, Eileen, do you want to introduce it? Well, I guess, yes, Jack, you want to explain how we
got here. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we begin on the Pinnacle project, can you hear me? I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice. Probably sometimes very well. That's worried about. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'm not Verizon, you know. At the conclusion of last week's meeting, it was noted by me that two speakers had spoken about the Pinnacle project and raised a few questions. And while I was somewhat familiar with the answers to those questions and was not uncomfortable, I heard from other council members and other people who were not familiar with the issue as we were. We also have a number of council members who have not been with us since the beginning, and so I thought it would be a prudent idea before the end of the day to call up this issue for consideration by the full council. Had I not done that, the time period for call-up would have expired and the issue would have been reverted back to the recommendation of the Natural Resources Committee. I have no problem with the recommendation of the Natural Resources Committee. I think they do a diligent job, they do a very valuable job, and all I wanted to do was, in the interest of clarification of the issues for the full council and for the public, to raise this issue before the full council in a full council meeting, as many members of the public who are here now, so that it could be clarified. And then the council can make its own determination based on that. There was no ulterior motive here. But in order to do that, I had to do it in a timely fashion. So I telephoned Eileen Swan at the conclusion of the meeting and told her what I intended to do. I returned home later that afternoon, and I sent her an email. I'd like to read the email so that you all know what I did. And I'm going to quote. It says, "Dear Director Swan, as you know and as I noted when I phoned you about 4 p.m., during the public portion of today's Islands Council meeting, two speakers referred to the subject proposal, that's the Pinnacle subject, and made statements suggesting that the Highlands Council and our Natural Resources Subcommittee should not even be involved in reviewing that particular application because it's an exempt project and the council has no authority. They also noted that it was a court order development. Before accepting those statements as fact, I respectfully ask that any conclusion to the matter be deferred until the veracity of those statements can be confirmed, and that the matter then come before the full council for consideration at our next meeting scheduled for March 6, 2008. And I sent that to her, I don't have the time on here, 5:23, she has it recorded. I know I sent it sometime in the late afternoon, so it was within the time frame or the week call-up period. One of the council members responded to that with another email, and in part that reads, "It is unfortunate that it continues to come up, this issue about jurisdiction, and be brought out by those seeking to avoid the Highlands Council's review. It went to the Natural Resources Committee in May of 2007. memo from Tom Borden outlining the process, and was given to all council members in the council meeting packet for the May 10th, 2007 meeting. Clearly, and obviously to me, because of the phone calls that I've received and comments I've heard since, we have heard an awful lot of stuff over the last 4 years. And not everyone has been sitting here for 4 years. Not everyone can recall everything that we heard over the last 4 years, even as recently as a year ago. I felt that there was no problem in calling this up, not for the purpose of undermining the Natural Resources Committee, but for full clarification of the issue and public transparency. And I think that the full council has the right and the obligation to do that. I also learned yesterday at about 4:45 yesterday afternoon that I have been asked to recuse myself from consideration of this issue because it was uncovered by person or persons not yet revealed that the engineering firm for this development, which is not even in Morris County, was a contributor to my freeholder campaign. And as a result, there may be a perception that I could be biased if I vote. I affirm to you that I do not know, even now, for certain how I will vote on this. I did not know when I called it up. I was simply looking for clarification. But because the Highlands Council's work is critically important to me, I spent 10 years of my life, along with some other people on this council, working to protect the Highlands. I do not want to have any of our decisions tainted by some action, even inadvertent, on my part. And so I will recuse myself from further consideration of this matter. Additionally, as I entered the meeting room this afternoon, another person approached me, and we discussed that individual's appearance here today. And I was surprised to learn that that individual also works for a firm that is involved with the other resolution before us. And so I feel compelled, but stricken, to recuse myself from both of these issues and will no longer participate in these discussions. I'm really very angry about this, and I'm trying not to show it. Elected officials are appointed to this council by law. Elected officials have a broad constituency. I was not plucked from the sea fully grown like Venus. I came here with a record. My record, I believe, speaks for itself. I believe that I have done an honorable job. Unlike some of the people who attend these meetings from time to time, I do not have a predisposition on all issues. I try to view things with an open mind and fairly. That's the last word I'm going to say about this right now. So I'll excuse myself.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Today, as I was traveling here, I was advised that the same person who said that Mr. Schreier had received money from one of the consultants on the Pinnacle claimed that I, as well, had received money and my campaign contributions for that. I was a little surprised by that because in my political career, I've only had one fundraiser, and I only invited people who were involved in the county organization. I'm unaware of any contribution coming from anybody at that firm. I called on my way the person who handles my elect reports, and I was advised that there was no campaign contribution from anyone from that firm that person was aware of, and that there were only a couple of reportable campaign contributions from that fundraiser, and that none of those people have anything to do with this. One is a personal injury attorney who's a close friend of mine, and the other is Senator Lance. However, I have not gone back through and checked each and every person who was there, and there's always the possibility there was somebody there who worked somewhere else and now works at some other place. And that raises a problem, because a lot of people who are involved in politics aren't always involved because they're looking for contracts. Sometimes they have an actual desire to be involved in politics. They make campaign contributions, sometimes small ones, sometimes larger ones, and they change jobs. I have a lot of friends that are attorneys. Is every time that somebody leaves one firm, goes to another, and that person's giving me money, that whole firm is now infected by this? That Jack's right, and you know what? I'm quite uncomfortable about staying for the other one, because I don't know who all worked on that one. Gosh knows, there could be somebody that contributed somewhere along the line. And, you know, I have a shorter track record than Jack does in campaigning and contributions for campaigns. But it's either we're gonna end up as a board of self-funded people if they're going to be politicians on here, and the statute requires it to be elected officials, or I have a feeling that we're all going to run into this problem, because some of the firms that the developers use are regional or national or statewide firms who do business everywhere in this state, all the towns, all the municipalities, all the counties. And eventually you're going to have one day where there's none of us are going to be able to participate. I'm going to recuse myself because I'd rather err on the side that my recollection is not without fault, nor is the person who does my elect reports. Unless there's something that I'm missing, I would ask the person who discovered this campaign contribution if they could supply you with where they discovered that information, because I want to verify it's whether it's correct or not, and if it's not correct, I want to fix it. Because to be perfectly honest, I have no recollection. Since I only had one fundraiser, I kind of know who pretty much was all there. I was fortunate and I self-funded the first part of my campaign, and I didn't have to spend much money. So I would like to get that information. I think it's only fair that if somebody's going to make that type of accusation, that it be substantiated so that we can see and so we have a better recollection as well. And I don't know how we're going to get away from this, because it's who knows who's on all these projects. I sure don't. And I don't know how we're going to make that determination, because I got to tell you, I'd rather not participate out of fear that there's somebody in here that gave me $50, gave me $100 for my campaign, and that somebody's going to come back and say that because of that, that I didn't have any recall of this, that somehow I'm doing something unethical. And I don't even want to take a chance of doing something unethical. So I think this is a situation that we all have to decide how it's going to work. It may take an opinion of the Attorney General's. It may take an executive order from the governor. But if you're going to have a body that's composed of, by statute, of elected officials, we're going to run into this problem more than just Jack and I. And I suspect that the other elected officials here are now wondering whether they may have a problem and just aren't aware of it, or at least a perceived problem, and that they're unaware of it. And so I'm going to recuse myself, and I'm uncomfortable with the second one until somebody can tell me whether we have some kind of vetting process. Because I know it's a burden on staff until something else comes up to change this.
I appreciate what you're saying, Eric, and what Jack said as well. And I think you used the word accusation in your thing, which is not.
I didn't mean that somebody was using a pure one.
Yeah, that's what I was
saying. I'm just saying that I could raise the issue, or right. However you want.
But I think by two things I want to say. One is one of the questions that arose when this was raised about Jack way back yesterday was, well, what about the fact that he was the one to call this up to the full council? And the conclusion of our council was that he didn't know he had a contribution from anybody related to this project at that time, so that was not a conflict. That's one point. The other point I want to make, just coincidentally, half of us had the pleasure of going through ethics training this afternoon in this room at 2 o'clock, and this issue came up, and the ethics trainer said, well, what's the harm in being overly cautious, basically? And I said, the harm is that the statute requires that half the members of this council be elected officials, and if everyone is going to excuse themselves on a whole lot of matters, we're not going to be able to do business. So I think I'm going to ask staff to put together a request to the State Ethics Commission to try to get both clarification at a minimum and sanity preferably on a policy that would let us continue to comply with the statute and move forward. But I understand the action you're taking today is prudent.
I'm just uncomfortable because there's obviously people out there looking for something, and I'm going to err on the side of caution. I have a reputation to maintain, and I'm not going to leave myself open. There has to be some vetting process to do this, or else I'm not going to feel comfortable with it because, like I said, in the course of politics and in my business, I run across people who are engineers, surveyors, attorneys especially, and I'm just concerned that we need some kind of guidelines, we need some kind of vetting process so that this doesn't come up again.
Okay, thank you.
John, yes. May I say something? I was one of the people to sat through the ethics training today, and it was a phrase that those of us who've done this for a while, we hear it frequently, and to remind ourselves of is an appearance of impropriety. And what she didn't say today that also rings in my ears frequently is if you have to ask the question, you probably have a conflict. That being, you know, was fresh in our minds now after all this. I'd like to raise the issue, not about campaign contributions, but in general, this process for calling up recommendations of the Natural Resource Subcommittee, and I don't sit on that subcommittee, so I feel comfortable saying this. We know we have all these inherent conflicts, and it's going to be an ongoing problem. As John mentioned, I don't know how we're going to resolve it, but I think we have to be particularly mindful of the appearance of impropriety in our actions as council members and in statements we make. And what I was troubled about was the call-up is I couldn't see, and this is not an accusation of Mr. Schreier, I'm sure it was for the best of intentions, but I really don't think this was a legitimate call-up for the reasons that were cited, and we're going to have to be very, very careful how we use this process, because it related to specific legal issues which clearly had been reviewed by our chief counsel, and if these were questionable items, we would count on our chief counsel to bring them before the councils, before our council. So I guess I'm saying this as advice to my fellow council members that we be very careful in our actions here, because we will be setting ourselves up for accusations of that type.
And I think also, I just want to say, I think aside from this issue, there's also the time question of, I've said this before, that if the council is going to delegate responsibilities to a committee and then basically re-review everything thoroughly that the committee has done, it's not a good use of our time. And as a couple of people were saying earlier, we have a large number of issues covering the entire Highlands region to address, and the more we spend time on individual sites, it may be instructive in some ways, but it also leaves, you know, it takes time, we don't have to.
I agree with you on that point,
okay.
Mr. Chairman. Getting back, I'm just another one of the elected officials in this room. I'm a little concerned, but I want to know whose responsibility is it to look back and see if there is a conflict for us. Is it ours? Or
how would you even begin to research the people associated?
Exactly.
Let me suggest this, because this has only come up in the last 24 hours or so. I think the members of the council would be comfortable with the legal opinion from the council staff that if you don't know you have a conflict, if you don't know that you received a political contribution from somebody involved with one of these projects, it can't bias you as you vote on it today. Going forward, it's clearly an issue we need to look at and figure out how to make it work better one way or another. But I don't think this is the time to discuss or resolve it, because none of us are the people with the power to do that. But we can at least form the questions better as we go forward.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say one thing on this. We do have public seats on the council, and I think that because we were advised today, for instance, and until we get a letter back from the Ethics Commission that, in response to the one that we send, we really need to follow the very strict advice that we received today, which is to err on the side of caution, which everybody is doing here. I think that one of the things we should look at is, because we are required to have a quorum, and then we're required to have a majority of the quorum in order to do business, that if we have public officials or former public officials sitting in public seats, we're going to run into this problem more often. So I just want to bring that up, and that I haven't looked at that, but I think it would be reasonable for us to look at the seats and see if, you know, we're making the problem worse by having officials who are elected, who may have these types of conflicts, sitting in seats that really are public seats.
But again, we're not the people appointing ourselves to this.
I know that.
Okay.
But we can advise. Okay. We can, then pass that advice back to those who are.
Well, John, I'd like to get this back focused on the two projects, but go ahead. Before us.
I have a couple hundred thousand customers in Northern New Jersey. Am I supposed to vet everybody who comes here to find out if they ever bought an apple from me? Because that would be a conflict, because if we're talking about $25 donations, if you bring a family of five to my farm, I guarantee you're dropping more than $25. And we wouldn't even begin to know, maybe it'd be 50. How would you even begin to know? Does that make me biased? If somebody comes into the antique store at Bill's and buys a piece of furniture and happens to be associated with a firm that happens to be associated with a project, is that buying influence with the bill?
I mean, that seldom happens.
You can draw this to the point of absurdity.
Yes, you could. It may have happened. But
the other part of it is if somebody makes an accusation against an elected official, and that there is no basis, and it's not in your elect report, do you recuse yourself? Is that one way you manipulate the work of the council? Do you say that this person gave you a donation, I know that for a fact, I don't have proof, but then you err on the side? That really subverts the whole process. So, you're right, I think we ought to get a ruling by the Ethics Commission on it.
So, Eileen, could I ask you to summarize the issues with Pinnacle and how we got to where we are?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to. What I will try to do is frame the issue that was raised and the reason for the call-up, which is really a process question and a question of jurisdiction. So, to remind all members of past actions by the Council and past considerations on the issue of water quality management plan amendments and the duties of the Highlands Council and the concerns raised over those projects that are considered to be exempt. And I would first remind you of the legal memo that was given to the Council May 2nd, 2007, the legal memo that really speaks to these issues. It talks about the fact, and I'll just highlight some of the issues from that memo, that NJDEP shall not approve a water quality management plan amendment in the planning area of the Highlands region without first obtaining a recommendation from the Highlands Council. The amended rules retain the requirement for a Highlands Council recommendation based upon the draft regional master plan and create more stringent consistency finding requirements upon the adoption of the RMP. The amended rule at NJAC 7:38 1.1k follows. For both the planning and the preservation areas, and I'm taking just parts of this memo out now, the department should approve a water quality management plan amendment, again, only after receiving a Highlands Council determination of consistency. Pending completion of the regional master plan, the department shall not approve a water quality management plan amendment for a project proposed in the planning area or preservation area, again, without first obtaining a recommendation from the Highlands Council. And just again to clarify, while we are under a draft plan, it is a recommendation. Those are the exact words. Upon adoption of the regional master plan, they will only approve WQMP amendments after receipt of a determination of consistency. Further, the memo speaks to the issues about exempt projects. The NJDEP rule discussed, NJAC 7:38, applies to any water quality management plan amendment in the planning area or preservation area and does not differentiate between exempt projects. Accordingly, the Highlands Council may provide recommendations on exempt projects. Further, the advice speaks to the fact that under the Water Quality Planning Act, NJDEP rules implementing that act require consultation and consent for water wastewater management plans and applicants for WQMPs that they must seek comments from and offer to confer with and seek written statements of consent under NJAC 7:15.3.4 from governmental planning entities such as the Highlands Council. And I remind you of that memo from May 2nd, 2007. The council obviously was debating the issue at that point in time, and that's what led to the to that particular advice from Chief Counsel. Further, on June 12th of 2007, once again the council considered the matter and considered exempt projects, and the result of that particular meeting was a resolution which was passed by this Highlands Council, which set forth the process by which exempt projects would be reviewed. And the resolution stated that the Natural Resources Committee and the Executive Director is hereby authorized to review and take action on behalf of the Highlands Council for proposed WQMP amendments on exempt projects and revisions and modifications to a wastewater quality management plan in the Highlands region. And two, the Natural Resource Committee shall obtain a staff recommendation on all proposed WQMP amendments on exempt projects and revisions and modifications to water quality management plan, shall review and finalize the recommended action, and shall direct the Executive Director to send the recommended action to the Highlands Council and thereafter send the action to NJDEP unless during a 7-working-day period after sending the recommended action, it is requested by council member that the matter be brought before the full council. And finally, it says the delegation of this authority shall be re-examined by the Highlands Council upon adoption of the regional master plan. So that puts it somewhat in context. I would also like to remind you that the precedent has been set by this council in that you have already provided recommendations on two exempt projects, Valley View Church and Arthur Stanley School in Jefferson. To then put give you a little bit of the history of the Pinnacle project, the council, the Highlands Council, is in receipt of a letter from a consulting firm working on the Pinnacle project, and this was sent to the Highlands Council, and it says, in accordance, I apologize, that the date of this letter is October 26, 2007, received by the Council October 30, 2007. In accordance with the Highlands rules at NJAC 7:38, the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection shall not approve a water quality management plan amendment for a project proposed in the planning area without first obtaining a recommendation from the Highlands Council. Thus, You are requested to review the enclosed materials, and in addition to providing a resolution of consent, provide NJDEP with any recommendations. The letter does state this project received an exemption from the Highlands Act on June 3rd, 2005, copy enclosed. So I just wanted to let you be aware that we did receive a request for the review of the project. The project was in the New Jersey Register on February 19th. The Natural Resources Committee met on February 14th, and those present at that meeting were, this is 2008, the Chair, Tim Dillingham, Scott Whitenack, and Eric Peterson was on the phone for that meeting, so by phone conference. The result of the deliberation at that meeting on this project was that if the committee members agreed, the committee would accept the staff recommendation, and there were no objections to that. So Mr. Dillingham instructed the staff to review the subsequent material from the applicant and to direct that information as appropriate to prepare the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection recommendation letter and to notify the council of the call-up period. That was February 14th. The letter to Department of Environmental Protection was prepared and sent to the council members on the 2nd, the 20th of February. The call-up period would be ended, close of business, on February 29th, and indeed the project was called up on February 28th. That is sort of trying to capture the history of exempt projects and deliberations by this council and advice given to this council by your chief counsel, and also the history of this particular project.
To get this under discussion, I'd like to solicit a motion to uphold the recommendation of the Natural Resource Committee that the comments go forward to DEP.
I'll second that.
Okay. So Bill Packer moves, Tracy seconds it. I wonder what members would, I assume there are a fair number of people in the public would like to comment. We could have public comment first and then members comment. Okay, why don't we do that? So if the members of the public would like to comment specifically on this project, that would be a good thing.
Since we're talking about a lot of other issues, I just wanted to start off Jeff Tittle, New Jersey Sierra Club. So before we go into, with the everything that's going on, I just wanted to bring a picture of the site so people understand what we're talking about. High Mountain, where this project is, this is one of the most famous shots of the Highlands from Ramapo Mountains looking across to New York City. And when you're on top of this ridge and you look out, this is High Mountain right here where this project is. So this is what we're talking about. This is probably the most, one of the most well-known pictures of the Highlands. So you're talking about basically cutting into that face of that mountain and building 208 units of housing. So that will destroy one of the most scenic ridges in the Highlands and destroy probably the most famous photograph of the Highlands. So I just wanted to bring that up so that people understand as we talk about water plan amendments and everything else, that we focus in on the site itself. And I unfortunately have been involved with this site, well, I'd say in some way or shape or form, probably close to 18 years. So know every inch of it and know all the histories and backgrounds and everything else. And unfortunately, we sometimes get lost in all the little things that go on and games and politics, and we tend to forget what it's really about. And what it really is about, first and foremost, is sound science. If there's any site within the Highlands that has any more criteria for preservation and any more warning for putting sewers on is this site. Because when you look at the positives of the site from an environmental standpoint, it has barred owl, it has steep slopes, there's endangered plant species in the area, it's part of a natural heritage priority site that's next to it, it's part of a greenway, it has a C1 stream, Pond Brook, which is on it, which is actually a mistake in the DEP bulletin, so it drains into it, but Pond Brook, which is on the site, is actually a C1. It drains into the Ramapo River, one of New Jersey's most scenic rivers. And this is and I also want to mention that what happens on this site impacts the drinking water for more than 500,000 people, because just less than 5 miles downstream on the Ramapo is the North Jersey water supply intake. And that intake is allowed to take in 64 million gallons a day. And that water is pumped from there to two places, the Wanakee Reservoir and the Oradell Reservoir. So what happens on the Ramapo River affects the drinking water supply for most of northern New Jersey, especially Bergen County. The Ramapo River, though it has a lot of wonderful things, has seen a lot of problems because of development pressures and over-withdrawal of that aquifer. What's called the 7Q10 number, and I know the wonks here know what I'm talking about, which is the 7-day low flow period of a 10-year drought, is happening on this river every 2 years now because of the depletion of that aquifer and the withdrawal of that water in that river. But what's that actually doing is it means that that river in the summertime is becoming too dirty and too concentrated that you can't take water from it. And so they can't pump during good parts of the year now because of the development that's happening in that watershed. And when you look at your own rules, it says that, you know, this is a watershed of more than 125% in deficit. So when you look at your own plan, you understand what we're talking about. This project, if it was to go forward, is going to take 60 million gallons a day and dump it more than 5 miles downstream beyond that water supply intake in another river into the Pompton River, because what they've done, and this is a long series of crazy stupidity, is that the water withdrawal is going to come out of a well field next to the river and deplete the river, and it's going to be discharged in the sewer plant in Wayne, which is probably 10 miles downstream on the Pompton River, so it's going to completely bypass that intake. Other important part is that the additional pollutant loadings will go right into the Passaic Valley's intake, which is only about a mile downstream from that outflow. So what we're talking about here is a direct impact on water supply intakes, both through depletion and through direct impact. This is one of those, it's a lot of issues. This is one of those stupid projects, and you have to understand it's Planning Area 1, because Chet Matson didn't believe in Planning Area 2. Part of it was an old sewer service area, and so it got mapped that way when it shouldn't have. And this has been a mistake from day one. And I just wanted to hit you with a couple of other things. When you look at this project, the borough of Oakland has a fair share housing plan in front of COA where they have an alternative site to build their units. And quite frankly, it's a site down below at an old motel right on Route 202. It's already got existing sewers. It would not have an impact. So you understand that the fair share obligation, well, actually it was a court case, can easily be moved. Two, when you look at the UHAC regs, which are the Universal Housing Administration Code, it talks about, it doesn't talk, it states that for affordable housing projects that no more than 20% can be one bedroom, no more than 30% can be two bedroom, and at least, and 20% has to be three bedroom. When you look at the breakout of this project, it's 28 affordables, eight are one bedroom, which is more than the 20%, 20 are two bedrooms, and there are no three bedrooms. So again, there's a problem. I just wanted to hit one last point, because I know you're giving me a look, is that on the exemption, and one of the reasons there's a lot of frustration is that when Commissioner Campbell gave that exemption in July, he based it on a loophole that was stuck in by Senator McNamara, saying if you were part of an affordable housing settlement and in Planning Area 1 and 2, you can get an exemption. The problem is more than a third of the site is in Planning Area 5, and that exemption should never have been granted. And so because of that bad decision, that was done when there was no public on exemptions. And unfortunately, environmentalists don't always have deep pockets and challenge things right away. And that's why the exemption is there. We believe that exemption should never have been granted in the first place. Just like this is one of those bad projects that have been kicking around for 20 years that should never be done. And quite frankly, having it at another site to have their affordable obligation makes a hell of a lot more sense. It was supposed to be originally 50 affordables. Now it's down to 28. So I'll leave it at that. Do your job.
Thank you.
Support your council. I mean, your committee.
Yes, sir. Back.
Mr. Chairman, Council, and Executive Director, I'm John McKinney of the law firm Wolf & Sampson, Council of Pinnacle Communities, LTD. I and others on behalf of Pinnacle are here today to request the Council to reject the resolution before you today in connection with this project and the proposed amendment to the WQMP. I would ask, Mr. Chairman, that the letter of Dennis Toth dated March 5th, 2008, that was delivered to Council today be included in the administrative record. Thank you.
It's dated March 5th, right?
Yeah, what did I say? March 5th.
Right.
Thank you. Pinnacle has previously replied to the points raised by staff. Pinnacle stated that two of the four issues raised are preempted by the Highland Act exemption applicable to this project, and two are simply incorrect factually and as a matter of law. The first point that was raised by staff is the inclusion of lands along riparian areas. Pinnacle has demonstrated that the project as proposed fully complies with all applicable riparian buffer requirements. Staff's position that other riparian areas are being improperly impacted is based upon the Council's resource assessment, which is a Highlands Act document, and ignores the exemption provided to Pinnacle by the Highlands Act. Another point raises the barred owl habitat. The only facts in the record are those presented by the applicant, that the project as designed will preserve whatever minimal corridor habitat value the site provides. The staff asserts incorrectly that the NJDEP's findings of acceptability apply to only those areas affected by the wetlands rather than by the entire project, despite our repeated efforts and the clear testimony before staff and the council. Water availability is another issue. The staff's assertion that the project is located in a HUC 14 with a water availability deficit is also an improper application of the Highlands Act to this project. This determination appears based upon either the draft regional master plan or the draft water resources technical report on the council's website. These documents are unadopted drafts. They are not proper basis for comment. Further, these draft documents are derived from the authority of the Highlands Act itself and are therefore, given the project's exemption from the Act, inapplicable to this project as a matter of law. Water availability is not an issue here, and even if it were, any concern by council about water availability may arise only in the context of the Highlands Act. And of course, the Act exempts this project from the Highlands Act. There's also the final question was the TMDLs for the Ramapo River. They haven't been adopted yet based upon our review. Therefore, this comment would have no basis in law or fact. As noted in the applicant's submissions, to the extent any new requirements are adopted in the future that become applicable to the project, they'll be addressed at the appropriate time. All these points have been raised, and yet staff produces the report on the website of 22908, the memorandum, which not only fails to address our comments, they attempt to justify staff's actions. First, staff concedes that this project is exempt from the Highlands Act and therefore exempt from the enhanced environmental standards for the preservation area. It is not this council's job to re-legislate an exemption or make a finding as to whether that exemption is appropriate or not. The applicant has the exemption. It is a statutory exemption. It is valid and binding. That memo further says that because the exemption has a time limit, council is free to review fully the proposed amendment against the RMP by saying you're assisting the applicant, by explaining to the applicant the potential inconsistencies if the exemption expires. This is an unasked for review that ignores the Highlands Act and the actual import of this exemption. The memo further states that despite the exemption, council is free to step outside its statutory jurisdiction and comment on a project exempt from its jurisdiction because staff contends other statutes authorize NJDEP to consult with government planning entities. But these laws don't require council to comment, much less comment in a fashion that annuls the very statutory exemption by which the council is bound. Adoption of this resolution can be read only one way. Council doesn't like this, that this project was exempted by statute, and it will do whatever it can to rescind the statutory exemption. Effectively, that's what you just heard from the previous speaker asking you to do. We do not think that is appropriate. We think that by adoption of this resolution, council will have taken an administrative action that deviates from the principle and policy of your enabling statute, will have exceeded the bounds of your discretion, and will have taken an action that is unreasonable, illegal, arbitrary, and capricious, and without sufficient credible evidence in the record. Two of the issues raised by staff, riparian zones and water availability are barred from consideration by the Highlands Act exemption. No TMDL has been adopted for the Ramapo River, and NJDEP has fully considered the barred AL issue. We request that Council not adopt this resolution. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. Would there be a question coming?
Thank you for your time to hear me today. I am new to this. I just happen to be a resident that lives in Pines Lake at the bottom of the mountain on the Wayne side. During Hurricane Jacqueline Schramm, 460 Indian Road. During Hurricane Floyd, it was a river literally that came down the entire length of our property for 7 hours straight. We are one house from the brook that originates at the top, at the peak, at the mountain where the Pinnacle Tract is, and it empties into Pines Lake. Of course, we know that was an unusual situation, but that was without this additional development. The whole area flooded. Everybody on Indian Road, my neighbors, et cetera, except for we living in New Jersey, don't believe we're living in a disaster area. So even though a lot of us got FEMA help, we don't talk about this, but that's a fact. And I have been visiting this track. What I thought that, you know, I was ignorant. I do a lot of other issues. I'm not that much of an environmentalist, but I happened to get an email the day before the Oakland hearing last fall, and I was shocked, and I put flyers in all my neighbors' mailboxes because I said I didn't know this was happening, and fortunately many of them showed up at the hearing. But it was, you know, it was something of we're sleeping. And I admit a lot of the residents, you know, we've been sleeping on this. So I know with what this attorney just said, it would seem like, you know, looking at all these stories, the stories get more, it gets more and more like a movie. But, you know, if the extensive item of the barred owl, I don't know what he means by extensive, because there has never been really an extensive study of that area. I've been visiting that area in different times, in the winter, in the snow, you know, right after it's rained. This is in the last, since October. And, you know, just it's just one of those things where I just want to say, I don't know the legalities, but it's very clear that once this is done, it can't be undone. I would do anything to help if Pinnacle would be open to reconsider to sell the property. You know, what is the price they would be asking? There's just so many issues. Oakland can't afford a school system for, you know, for these people that are going to be there. And we certainly can't afford to have more water come down the brook. I've specifically looked at where would the water from the retention basin, should they overflow? Should we have something even a quarter of what Hurricane Floyd was? And there is nowhere for that water once it would overflow in the retention basin. It seems like there's large sewers that would lead to the brook. And it would all come down the brook on the Wayne side, past a Manitou townhouse resident, where they flooded extensively during Floyd. Indian Hills, a large development. And if it even stayed in the brook, eventually, you know, flooding Indian Road and into Pines Lake. So, you know, I know that that's not even the sewage problem. But I just needed to speak because it's very much, I keep looking at the changed plans, you know, the blasting. It is a solid mountain rock.
Thank you for your comments, but thank you
okay.
very much.
Okay, thank
Thanks
you.
Very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the council. My name is Bob Simpson. I am also from Wayne. I am a member of the Wayne Environmental Commission, and while many of our members agree that this planned development should not occur, I have not been given authorized to speak on behalf of all the members of the commission. That being said, I would like to say that I am a serious environmentalist and maintain for the New York New Jersey Trail Conference a section of trail that traverses the peak of High Mountain in the High Mountain Preserve in Wayne. And the area of our concern today, the Pinnacle Planned Development Area in Oakland, New Jersey, is an area that I have hiked many, many times. It is a wonderful, pristine, and glorious oasis in the middle of suburbia. Last Monday, I walked over the area again, bordering Wayne with the headwaters of Haycock Brook. I found one buffer marker on one side of the brook and not on the other. When I picked up the photographs that I guess you've all seen, I somehow can't quite fit this into what I physically saw. I'd like to see a topographical map because the brook just runs too close to all of what I see here being a distance away. I'm going to just give you a little conclusion of the way I see things happening and feel right now. If I were in your seat, a member of the council, I would shudder at this project. Any one of the environmental reasons that have been given, and each of the reasons for the Highlands Act, is a reason to reject this project. A town engineer once told me that his town almost never granted variances. What's the sense of having a law if you keep making exceptions to the rule, he said. If this development is allowed to continue with the good graces of the council, and I were sitting where you are sitting, my timbers would shiver, realizing that the council's decision set one of those terrible, terrible legal precedents that it would open Pandora's box, and any and every developer, and no one would be able to stop the exceptions. The Highlands Preservation Act would become impotent. If this project is allowed to go through, that will be the end of the dream, the purpose, the wonder, and beauty that you have for so long labored over for the good of the state and millions of its water-drinking inhabitants. The Native Americans considered mountaintops to be sacred. With our science, we know why they should be considered sacred. The devastation of nearby mountaintops in Wayne and Pompton Lakes would make them cry, and we should too.
I need to ask you to wrap up your comments.
Land is, as water and air are, a part of every man's and every woman's commons. They belong to each and every one of us and the other species that depend on them for life. If I were in your shoes, and I'm not, I would not allow this project to continue. I hope you agree. Thank you for your serious work and consideration of the future, our future, and our children's through the seventh generation. Thank you.
Can you show of hands on how many other people would like to comment on this project?
Good afternoon. My name is Brenda Holzinger, and I'm a resident of the Highlands region. And I'm here this afternoon representing the New York New Jersey Trail Conference. And I just want to make one very short and simple point. We have prepared a map. And there are individual copies coming around. And our concern with the Pinnacle Project, and this is it right here, is that it's smack in the middle of the only remaining greenway in the area that could connect two of our major preserved areas, Ramapo Mountain State Forest and High Martin Park Preserve down to the south. And you can see all the area around is completely developed. And this is, in fact, the only open corridor that's left. And just, you know, beside the connective purpose that such a corridor would serve, it would also protect all of the environmental issues that have been discussed here already as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Commenters? You will go.
Good afternoon, Jeff Schwartz, 172 Long Hill Road, Oakland, New Jersey. I live directly adjacent to the Highlands and to the Pinnacle property in question. And Everybody else has said a lot of great things about the environment, so I'm going to skip all that. We love the land, we like to hike it, and blah, blah, blah. And we don't want the development, obviously, next to my house. But I think there some good reasons are that it's interesting that we have a plan from a developer that only has 150-foot buffer from a C1 stream on their property. And they have five buildings, not five units, five buildings, multi-unit buildings, and roadways within the 300-foot, outside the 150-foot, but within the 300-foot buffer that is supposed to exist around a C1 stream, from what I understand. I'm not a professional in your business. And I don't understand how that's possible that they can do that. The other thing is that the affordable housing, the COA, Oakland does not need this project to satisfy our affordable housing. This project is not included in our affordable housing requirements, and we don't need this project to satisfy our COA. So, you know, if that's their reason to build this development, that's not a good reason. It doesn't exist. Also, I'm not a lawyer, but from what I understand, that the Pinnacles exemption to the Highlands Act is based on the fact that it's supposed to be based on a court judgment, which they don't have. They have a settlement agreement, and from what I understand, a settlement agreement is not a court judgment, and therefore they should not be exempt from the Highlands Act. The other thing is that the Oakland Mayor and Council, the governing body, have been trying to work with Pinnacle through the years, and they're also working with the county, the state, and federal authorities to try and get matching funds to buy the property. And I can tell you that Pinnacle has not been cooperative in allowing access, A, to the land for anybody who needs to see the land, and B, they have not been cooperative in working playing nice in the sandbox, so to speak, with our mayor and council in negotiating for us to buy the property. Oakland wants to buy the property. Nobody in Oakland wants this development. I've been living in town since 87, and we've been fighting since the early 90s when this thing started. And the other thing I can say is, you know, I totally respect what you folks do and your professional capacities as planners and environmentalists, and to that end, I don't see how there's any way that, being on the Highlands Council, that you could allow this project to go forward. And you must pass the resolution that's before you. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
I'm afraid to stand up in case I shout out somebody like I did last time. Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. I did it. I am the person who called and asked if there was a conflict of interest when a council member has received contributions from members of the public. There is no suggestion that there is any accusation of inappropriate action on the part, but the public does deserve the right to be sure that, you know, everything should be squeaky clean. What we did was we went to the New Jersey Elect site and did a little bit of very simple research. And I would be happy to provide to Eileen the supporting documents that show that support these contributions. So just so that you know, there are all these sort of this person and that person. I'm the person who did call and say these. It would appear to us that there might be a conflict of interest here. On the issue of Pinnacle, we believe strongly that it is so important for this council to have faith in your council staff. You cannot operate, frankly, if you do not put your trust in your council staff. To have faith in the committees that you establish. They are open to all of you to participate in. These committees have put in a great deal of time, and to keep calling up their decisions is really counterproductive and unhelpful for the work that you are trying to do. on as far as the Threatened and Endangered Species Act, the Natural Resources Committee meeting, there was testimony given that the work done on whether or not there is barred owl on the site would appear to have been done outside the way the protocol that is established by the DEP for this, and in fact the search for the barred owl was done at the wrong time of year. That testimony was from Peggy Snyder, who is an engineer and consultant. There has been testimony at the Natural Resource Committee meeting, passionate testimony about how hard and for how long Oakland has been trying to purchase this site and how difficult it has been to work with this applicant and how important this site is to Oakland. It is an absolutely irreplaceable connection between major regional open spaces, and without that corridor, a tremendous amount of diversity will be lost. You are hearing so much passion because of that photograph that you saw. That photograph should have had dollar signs all over it. But it also generates incredible passion from people who want to protect it. That's why they're still in here fighting so many years later to try and protect it. And you have been told by your council that you have the obligation to make a recommendation to DEP, and I appeal to you to support the recommendation of the Natural Resource Committee and the recommendation of your staff. I have already testified on this issue, and I'm happy to give you a copy of that. We request that you support this resolution, that you support your staff, that you take your council's advice every time, and fulfill your charter and your charge. Please support this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. We would like to hear from everyone who wants to speak, but I ask that you keep your comments as concise as possible and you not feel the need to really repeat a lot of what's been said before. This woman on the side here. You, go ahead.
Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Jeff Alfaro, 54 Martha Place in Oakland. Our road is right next to the proposed Pinnacle Project. Our road is right next to the proposed Pinnacle Project that's been ongoing for years, and I've been involved at the citizen level with trying to deter the completion of this project. And there's lots of different issues that have been brought up here, but I just want to reemphasize the water issue. When I hear of 66,000 gallons per day being drawn off the Ramapo River, pumped into a water tower, I start to become concerned about the possibility of drought, which is something that is more than likely inevitable. In Atlanta, they had no water this summer, and if that would ever happen in the Oakland area, in the northeast area, there would be nowhere for them to even draw this 66,000 gallons of water, no less the fact that it strains the water system on a normal particular day. So I just want to reemphasize that fact, that they have been, you know, exempt through a legal arrangement from the Highlands Act, and the issues that have been brought up in front of these particular council are important to enforce. It is your mandate, your mission statement, to defend the environment and to assist us in all these legal technicalities that arise when people try to propose these development projects. And so we ask you, for all the citizens from Oakland and from specifically Martha Place, that, you know, you help us in enforcing the laws that do exist and not amending any of them to accommodate developers and their wishes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm getting tired of seeing me here. Betsy Stagg, Borough of Oakland. I am a councilwoman, have been for almost 6 years. I do not represent all the other council people. I cannot speak for them. They would love to be here, but they have to do developer agreements, and they cannot speak without jeopardizing their rights. I live close enough, I can't vote anyway, so I'm here. I have been trying, since I got on the council 6 years ago, to purchase this property from the owners. I have been to the state, John Flynn, I've been to the county of Bergen, I have t- talked to many other environmental groups in trying to save this property. It really needs to be saved. It is just a tremendous link, as other people have said, between High Mountain Wilderness Park, which is purchased by Green Acres, and the Ramapo Mountain State Forest, which is all purchased by Green Acres. I mean, this is just a leg or an arm that connects the two, and it really should be saved. What I couldn't tell you last time I either came to Natural Resources or the council last week was that the Borough of Oakland just passed an ordinance last week. We have committed $5 million in a bond to purchase land right next to the site. We are committed to saving the site. We think it's that important. And we're willing to put our actions, you know, where our mouth is. We're making those commitments. It's an invaluable site, and I really think, I think what really was bothering me the most is that you would even question your staff report. I mean, you hire professionals, they spend hours and hours researching, coming up with something, and then you sit here and you say, well, maybe we don't want to buy it. And I just like, I think the Highlands Council is like on a really thin rope right now. There's a lot of people don't think there should be a Highlands Council. And I think that, you know, when you don't back your own experts, you are really opening yourself up for like, well, you know, are they just making all political decisions? Or what are they basing things on? So, you know, maybe that's not something you want to hear, but I really think that, you know, the Borough of Oakland has bought into the Highlands Council and all the plans. We've bought into the whole preservation, the planning area. I think Eileen knows we're into the smart growth thing, and we're trying to do what's best for the state of New Jersey and our residents. And one thing that is not best is to tear up that mountain when there's other places that people could be situated and live. And yet they're not on our core plan. They never will be. Thank you. Thanks again.
Other people want to comment? And Puma, or either of you.
Thank you. I'm David Pringle. I'm the campaign director for the New Jersey Environmental Federation, and I'll be brief. On the broader issue of conflict of interest, I just wanted to concur with Tracy that having 80% instead of 50% of the council being elected officials exacerbates the problem. I know that's not in your control, but you could advise the governor accordingly. Second, I would urge you to have the opinion on what is or isn't kosher be done by the Attorney General, not the Ethics Commission. The Ethics Commission is one that found three currently federally indicted senators that there was nothing wrong with them. They're not the best arbiter of what is or isn't ethical. On to the particulars of all three of which less than 2 months ago were serving on the budget committee. No, but it's a reality. You're asking for Ethics Committee opinion, and I don't think they're very credible. On the particulars of this project, we very much support the council staff, Natural Resource Committee, and my environmental community colleagues' interpretation of the law and recommendations, and thank the staff for doing their job here and doing it so well. To paraphrase our president, you are the advisor here, not the decider. This parcel may be exempt from, or this project may be exempt from regulation by this council, but is not exempt from this council having an opinion about that, sharing that opinion with decision makers on non-Highlands Act actions, especially when you're required to by law. And again, I think Eileen articulated how you are required to have and share that opinion. At this point, this is even coming up before the council today, and that staff and committee's recommendations weren't just followed, and that all of us are wasting energy and time here today on this. Be that as it may, urge you to do your job, follow the committee and staff's recommendations, and remind you that you aren't charged with interpreting other people's existing regs, but you are in charged with protecting the natural resources of the Highlands. Thank you.
Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I'd just like to reiterate what other folks have already said. I urge you to support the resolution and the recommendation of the staff and the Natural Resources Committee. To have faith in your own counsel, legal opinion, a very, very fine attorney,
very honest and clear and quite brilliant, I would say, actually. So please have confidence in that you do have the authority to make this recommendation. As Dave Pringle said, it's not quite the decision, but it's urging the correct decision. It's clear that recommending that this WQNP not be granted is the right decision. This is a project that exemplifies what the Highlands Act was all about. And to allow this to further continue this project would be directly counter to the momentum that set the Highlands Act in motion. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Betsy Cohn. I'm co-chair of the Sierra Club North Jersey Group. I'm not going to repeat anything. I agree with everything my colleagues have said in the environmental community. I simply want to add that the simple fact is this project only persists to this day because of a series of wrong actions and wrong decisions taken on its behalf, beginning with the egregious Builders Remedy lawsuit in the mid to late 1980s, asking for 850 units on this site. Oakland had a gun to its head to make the settlement in 1991 for 370. It originally turned this project down when it was 216 units because that exceeded the zone density and because of the environmental concerns. That was in 1985. We've come a long way since, and we're here today with a Highlands Act, a Highlands Council, and an RMP. From that first wrong decision, the Builder's Remedy, the egregious, extreme, ridiculous Builder's Remedy, can you imagine 850 units? I mean, it's just for extortionate reasons that the builder did that. From that has flowed just one wrong after another, culminating in the grant of the Highlands exemption, which, as Jeff pointed out, was based on having PA1 and PA2 properties when, in fact, it's over a third is PA5 environmentally sensitive. It is time now for a right action on Pinnacle, and I hope that you will make this in agreeing to the resolution, the recommendation of your scientists. Thank you.
Elliot Ruga, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Throughout the several drafts of the regional master plan, there is considerable mention of preserving the unique character of the New Jersey Highlands region, though that lacks definition currently. If there ever was a poster child of what that unique character would look like, it is this site. And if there is any bite behind that concept in the RMP, it is to be applied here. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Mike County. May I go first?
Please.
Thank you. I just have two quick points to make. You know, I have said this over and over again, time is of the essence for us to reach our goals, and we all want to get there. We created committees so that the huge workload will be divided, and we can come together, when we do come together, to discuss important new issues and not to rehash old ones. So I feel very strongly that we ought to support the standing committees. Secondly, I think I can speak with confidence when I say that Burton County needs more open space and not more development. This project should not go forward. Thank you.
I just want to briefly comment on the whole exemption issue. We've discussed this before. You know, a lot of us had concerns as to where our jurisdiction lies. And based on a memorandum put together by our chief counsel on May the 2nd, 2007, I think that made it very clear that according to the DEP regulations, that we are required to make a determination with regard to water quality management plans, and I think that that's what we're doing, and our staff has done a very good job in outlining the problems with this plan.
Mr. Chairman, I also would urge the council to support the resolution. Just to speak to the suggestion, I'll put it in the record that we're acting because we don't like this exemption. I think that the council well knows that we've discussed this issue of jurisdiction for a long time prior to this application coming before us. In fact, we've acted on other exemptions under the same legal advice that we've got from our council. In fact, recommended approval of several of those exemptions. Secondly, I appreciate the passion that people brought to their testimony today, but I think we spent many, many hours in this committee trying to be objective and trying to run a review that clearly matches the facts of these cases, of these applications, against the standards that we're subject to and that we're responsible for. And in cases that are different than the ones that the DEP reviews, but are clearly all within our jurisdiction. This is a straight-up project that's inconsistent in many ways with what we're trying to do, and I think we should adopt this resolution.
I think the Natural Resource Committee did a fine job, and so did staff. I'd like to support it. I'd also like to make the comment that I hope to get this kind of support every time when, quote, scientists make a decision.
I would echo what Phil said, as well as what Pleasanton said. You know, I have a great deal of faith in our staff and the recommendations that they put forward, and we have set up the committee structure for that reason, so that they could be reviewed and vetted in that environment.
Yes, I'd just like to say that in the memo from our council from last May, it is made very clear that while a project may be exempt from the Highlands Act, found exempt from the Highlands Act, it's not exempt from the water quality management planning rules, and that is what we are doing here. We are looking at how this project measures up to the water quality management planning rules, and because of that, and because DEP found it to be an exempt project, our staff did a larger review, but the decision not to recommend approval of this project and to find it inconsistent was based only on Executive Order 109 issues. And I think that's very important for the record. And those were based on the riparian and open waters issues, the critical habitat issues, and the water issues, the water resource impact issues. So I think we did what we were supposed to do. We followed the process to the T, and we followed the law exactly as we are charged to do. And I support us supporting the Natural Resources Committee resolution.
I just want to add to what my colleagues have said, and I concur with all their comments, that this the assertion made that the adoption of this resolution would be arbitrary and capricious. While I respect people's opinions, given the entire exercise that we've been through on this, it's certainly been thoroughly reviewed, and I don't think we should fear that would be a valid accusation against us. Also, I'll actually form this as a question for our council, though. Exemptions refer to certain types of regulations, but those exemptions do not exclude the requirement for permits that are necessary relative to a project. Is that not true? And that's really what we're talking about, is a separate permitting decision unrelated to the land use regulation.
No, that's correct, Debbie, that as far as when it's exempt from the Act or the rules adopted by DEP pursuant to the Act, but that does not mean or obviate the need to go through a review where DEP has separate authority, in this case to review the project under the WQMP Act. And that's exactly as I understand it.
Thank you.
The role that the council has played here.
Did you show you still on the phone, and did you have any comments?
Yeah, I'm still on the phone, Chairman, and I would like to make a comment, if I may. With regards to this request for this project and the issue that has been brought forth, I just want to say that, you know, I've been sitting here on the phone, and, of course, I've been digesting the comments. I'm not even going to delve into the other issue dealing with the ethics, if you will. But we've been discussing something, and in my eyes, and I'm not saying that this was not worthy of discussion, but we had already established how the council was going to proceed. And I really lend credence to the staff. I know that the Natural Resources Committee does a laudable job, and if I can say, they're, in my eyes, they're not biased in their findings. It's true science. So with that being said, I definitely have to support us moving forward with regards to our findings.
Any other comments? If not, we'll pull. Okay. Kurt Alstead.
Yes.
Liz Calabert.
Yes.
Tracy Carluccio.
Yes.
Bill Cogger.
Yes.
Tim Dillingham.
Yes.
Janice Kovach.
Yes.
Mimi Letts.
Yes.
Terry Pascarelli.
Yes.
Glenn Petrano.
Abstain.
Tahisha Way.
Yes.
And I vote yes, so it passes 10 to 0 to 1. So we will make that recommendation to DEP, to the court committee's recommendation, and we move on to one more Water Quality Management Plan amendment, which did not go through the Natural Resources Committee, so it's a different matter. So I think everybody understand.
Mr. Chair, before we go any further, I would just like to take the advice, the sound advice of our ethics officer. I'm going to have to recuse myself next resolution.
For a different reason. Because it pertains to Sussex County. Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you.
The next matter before us is a proposed amendment to the Sussex County Upper Raritan and Upper Delaware Water Quality Management Plans and an HPAA with waiver. This is very different to the last matter and in fact to other water quality management plans that we've been engaged in. And this did not go through the Natural Resources Committee, as you say. Just to give you some background on this project, this project is to allow for the extension of sewers into to serve 45 existing developed residential parcels in both Mount Arlington and Roxbury Township. These particular developed parcels are on small lots with septics, and the concern is that these septics are causing issues with Lake Padcock. And therefore, Mount Arlington and Roxbury applied for the ability to have a waiver from the Jersey Department of Environmental Protection so that they could extend sewage to this area. In DEP's deliberations, they find that the individual subsurface sewage disposal systems serving the existing residential dwellings pose a high potential for failure. And further, when the DEP established total maximum daily loads, TDMLs, for phosphorus for four lakes, including Lake Hopatcong, the study attributes approximately 32% of the Lake Hopatcong total phosphorus load to septic systems in the watershed area around the lake, including Mount Arlington. In September 2007, the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection also established TDMLs for pathogens for 11 lakes, including Lake Hopatcong watershed, specifically for fecal coliform in Lake Hopatcong. Again, the TDML in this case states that failing septics can be a source of fecal coliform. For this reason, the waiver was granted by the Department of Environmental Protection, and thus the matter is before the council for consideration to allow the expansion of sewers beyond existing areas served to serve lands, and I'm reading from our regional master plan, to serve lands which are appropriate for infill or redevelopment, or to serve areas if they are shown to be necessary for and are approved by the Highlands Council to address the documented threat to public health and safety, where no alternative is feasible, to serve cluster development or to provide for minimum practical use in the absence of any alternative through issuance of a waiver by New Jersey Department for Environmental Protection or the Highlands Council, and would maximize the protection of sensitive environmental resources. This is policy 2K4, objective 2K4C on page 139 of the plan. The staff recommendation to the council, and we did give you a checklist and maps on this area, is we find that it is consistent with the goals, policies, and objectives of the final draft regional master plan, and we would recommend that the Highlands Council authorise the issuance of a letter to the Department of Environmental Protection stating that the proposed amendment and HPA waiver request is consistent with the final draft regional master plan. This project does have the support of both Mount Arlington, I see the mayor here with us this evening, and with Roxbury.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we approve this application.
Okay. We'll do it. Council's agree we'll do the same thing. We get public comment first, Mayor, would like, people in the public would like to speak.
I don't think anybody's here for this one.
Come on, okay.
Well, I'll be glad to get up and speak.
The seat's kind of hot. I don't know. I'll give it a shot. Well, good evening, and thank you for considering us with this resolution and the letter. This is a project that's been going on for... Art Ondish, I'm the mayor in Mount Arlington. This is my engineer. Go ahead.
Darren Phil.
With Suburban Consulting Engineers, so our borough engineer. I guess close to 4 years now this is going on. And I'm so happy that we're not introducing new development. We're only trying to capture existing development in order to protect Lake Opakon. As it says, the septics there are borderline. I am so glad that I wasn't out there, or I hope that nobody tested things night before last with all that rain, because I'm afraid what the stream that runs down behind the Decker School and Harrah Boulevard and into Lake Opakon, what was in that stream. I'm hopeful we're going to be able to take care of that so that doesn't happen again. But this is basically, to me, it's a no-brainer. I hope it's a no-brainer to all of you. It was complicated. We got all through all the hurdles, jumped all the hurdles. I think we've met all the requirements. As a matter of fact, the public hearing was yesterday. Nobody showed up because we had meetings before and explained to everybody exactly what we were doing. The residents there, they're all in favor of it. It's a good thing. It's a good thing for everybody. It makes a lot of sense. So, Darren, did you have anything to add?
Unless there's any technical questions pertaining to the project, I think the only thing is why this project took so long to sewer was because the Musconetcong Sewage Authority's interceptor was planned to run up into Jefferson, and then these three streets would tie in by gravity. And since it appears that Jefferson is not getting the public support to bring sewers in, and it's been almost a decade now since the rest of the town's been sewered, our office went through and evaluated and came up with this plan to turn around and sewer the people without that extension. So otherwise, this whole neighborhood would have been done back, years and years ago with the rest of the municipality.
This is probably about the third plan, by the way, that Darren has come up with, his office has come up with. So you can just imagine how much money went into this engineering-wise. No offense, Darren, but it has cost us a bundle to make this happen. So we hope that you'll support us on this and get this thing through. So are there any questions or concerns?
I just have one question, but it's not really related. But there are more sections of the town which are in similar situations, aren't they? That you have high density water septic systems.
Actually, we're very close. There's two more streets right near the way. If I had the map, I'd show you. But there's two streets that really need Jefferson to move forward to extend the MSA line in order to pick those up gravity-wise. We can't pump from there to get them into the system. But they're two high streets. I don't know. They have septics. I haven't heard anything from them. I know there's dry lines in there already. They're waiting. We'd love to be able to hook up, but we have to wait for Jefferson to come through the interceptor line, to extend the interceptor line. I don't think the MSA is going to pay to put that line all the way to the border of Jefferson for, what are they up there, about maybe 15, 20 homes?
Right. So plus, they're on the other side of Howard Boulevard, which is out of the Highlands.
So I also chair the Lake Opakon Commission, and this is a very positive thing for the commission. The commission is very much behind this as well, because our job is to clean up Lake Opakon, and this is one small piece that needs to be taken care of in order to move forward with that process.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I have a process question. Why didn't this go through review by the National Resource?
Because it was a public health and safety concern was the issue, and it was a timing question, I think, of getting the committee together.
And also, Mr. Chair, I might remind you at the last meeting you had said that we were going to work as a...
That was the other thing, though, that we were trying to... it's partly that we've been having a hard time getting committees scheduled to work. And so we're going to try to, because we're going to be having more council meetings over the next few months, to bring it right here. I think this is the only one left. Do we expect any other water pipe?
We do have another one, but quite frankly, we're talking to the Department of Environmental Protection, and would prefer if we were able to work on the plan before we consider a major one, because it's a town-wide water quality management plan.
And I guess I raise the question because, you know, many of us look to the Natural Resource Subcommittee to provide a technical review that some of us feel we're not qualified to do independently. So in these cases where we're bringing it forward to the whole council, can we ask our chairman of our Natural Resource Subcommittee to comment on it, or a letter in advance, whatever? We don't have to decide that now. I just want to throw that out there. And I know you don't have enough to do, Tim, and I'm sure you appreciate it.
Rather than having a committee meeting, I can stay at home and work on
Or the committee can, you know, do it offline, whatever. But it just seems, I want to make sure we're making good decisions based on. And again, I have no objection to this resolution, but there could be something a little more complicated down the line.
As I said earlier, I think that we do spend a lot of time, and there is a diversity of opinions on that committee. So I think we vet these projects very well. I will say on this one, my take is that this is how sewers ought to be used.
I'm sorry?
This is how sewers ought to be used in the Highlands region, is to fix these historic problems that are right out of it.
And we are, Debbie, I did have staff prepared in case you wanted to go through a full review of the checklist and the maps, which the chair of the Natural Resources Committee rightly said that he would like provided, even on a project that did seem to be relatively simple, but that's why this process was set up. So we were, and I would anticipate that had you asked, and should you ask, that we could have staff do a full review as they do at the Natural Resources Committee. But this one being public health and safety, I will admit to being optimistic that perhaps that wouldn't be considered necessary.
And there could be an issue to relative sustainability of our decisions by making sure we go through the complete process. That's just occurred to me. So,
and so as a matter of record, you do have the maps and the checklist.
Yes. Yes, it's all in here for us to look at.
All right. Any other comments or questions? We just had public comment on this application already, so I think we'll move to a vote. All those.
Not everybody got to.
Everybody did at the time. I don't know where people were, but you're outside, so I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment that I'm not going to support the resolution because the project is in a current deficit area, and whereas I understand that the staff has found that the health and safety waiver is appropriate and that it will address existing sewage problems. I simply can't support the development because it is in a current deficit area.
Kurt Alstead?
Yes.
Liz Calabrese?
Yes.
Tracy Carluccio?
No.
Bill Cotter?
Yes.
Tim Dillingham?
Yes.
Janice Kovach?
Yes.
Bibi Lips?
Yes.
Debbie Pascarelli?
Yes.
Tahisha Way?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes, so it passes 9-1. That concludes the matters on our agenda, but Debbie wanted to revisit the COA question because I guess you were out of the room when we talked about it. You had some comments to suggest on the letter.
I apologize. I had stepped out of the room.
Thank you very much.
Well, very much.
To take a phone call.
Okay.
I actually prepared comments on this, so I asked John to give me this opportunity. This is relative to the draft of the comment letter from the council to COA on their proposed rules. And I apologize if I repeat something somebody else said, since I didn't hear the comments, but I think there are some substantive issues that we should be commenting on as a council because it relates to the business that that is at hand for us, and that has to do with TDR receiving as well as just a regional master plan in compliance with a feasible. Some of these are practical matters related to town's ability to conform to these COA rules and be consistent with the Highlands Act. So I just want to throw a couple things out there and ask to be considered to be included. And one is a general comment on, actually I have a question first. and our counsel has left.
I don't know.
He will
return, but he momentarily.
Okay. The letter doesn't refer specifically to the preservation area at all. And so my first comment was a question of whenever it refers to regional master plan, is that referring to planning area and preservation area or just planning area?
Both areas.
Okay. All right. That's simple then. It appears to many of us who look at these COA rules that it's going to be impossible for municipalities to comply with them as proposed because of the Highlands Act. And that there's a disconnect in state policies on this. And there's going to be a lot of comments from a lot of towns. I know I'm involved in preparing comments in Greenwich Township, which aren't completed yet. I don't think it's going to be as big an issue for us, but using the town of Milford as an example, it is a town that is entirely within the preservation area and they have a 250-unit obligation. While we haven't done a thorough analysis of it, it seems unlikely they're going to be able to comply with that and be consistent with the goals, intent, and requirements of the Highlands Act. I think we should comment on some of these things and explain this out, and if who better than us to comment on this? It certainly should be the Highlands Council. There's also some misunderstandings about what these rules refer to. There is an adjustment that could be made to municipal projections, but if you read closely and understand what the proposed rules are saying, it really isn't an adjustment. It's simply that, in this case, the 250-unit obligation goes from being called a growth share obligation to an unmet need. It's like having the same two columns on a spreadsheet, but the total at the end ends up being the same. And that's going to have a lot of significance. I think the growth obligations don't reflect the realities of the Highlands Act. That's maybe saying it in a nutshell. And secondly, it's going to interfere with our ability to impose a TDR program because related to this fact of even though there's an adjustment and simply the obligation changes from a growth share to an unmet need, specifically there's something in the letter that I think is actually contrary. And it's at the end, the last provision, item 8 on page 5, where the council is suggesting that there is a COA consider amendment that recognizes that additional units created TDR zone provide for land preservation in the Highland Sending Zones and serve a public purpose. And so COA should consider these additional units do not trigger growth share obligations. There's something in the COA rules that talks about how in order to comply with these new rules, a town would be obligated to increase density in vacant land to accommodate the growth share or unmet needs requirement. So how practically, I think there's likely to be a lot of towns in this situation, they're already going to be required if these rules are adopted to increase density to comply with them, and the density is 6 units per acre, which is fairly high. If then we're going through, and that, it's a requirement is you have to satisfy those COA requirements before you can increase density for any other purpose, i.e. to become a TDR receiving area. That going up to that 6 units per acre would only accommodate the growth share and not an unmet needs. We would not be able to accommodate additional development from TDR receiving. Obviously, Jeff, I only read these this morning, or I would have called you maybe and asked you some of these questions about it, but I think my general comment is that we need to go beyond what was in this memo, some of which were technical, looking for language changes, and look at some of these broader issues. I think we have an obligation to do that, and that was lacking in this letter. So that's my comments to my fellow council members.
I would answer just by saying that we did consider all of Debbie's comments. A lot of this we've been working on in terms of an MOU with COA, but we do think it's important that the comments that Debbie is raising are addressed in this letter. And where we see the opportunity to have this done was we remind this letter, COA, of their obligation to consider the regional master plan in terms of third round obligations. And on page 3, the second paragraph, we talk about the fact that in order to clarify the proposed rule and we cite the rule and implement the requirement in the Highlands Act that COA take into consideration the regional master plan for all Highlands municipalities, it is recommended that this section be clarified and that the regional master plan be specifically incorporated by reference. a similar incorporance by reference of the regional master plan has been adopted by in the rules at NJAC 7:38, those with DEP rules. So what we're trying to get to here is the fact that you're quite right, Debbie, when you say that the numbers that they're projecting may not indeed be able to be realized. And so that kind of planning that they're mandating occur to allow for that kind of growth, we believe may not be possible with the protections that we are asked to afford these municipalities and the resources through the regional master plan. So on working on this letter, it was our intent in this area to make sure that the COA realized, and elsewhere in the letter it states that it's, in fact it's above it, that it's not just a matter of conformance. Regardless of whether a community conforms or not, the COA is required to consider the regional master plan. And in terms of municipalities entirely within the preservation area, of which there are five, there is a waiver provision allowed for 100% affordable housing if sponsored by that municipality. And that was not in the letter because it is there. It's afforded to these municipalities already so that they can we can assist those five in meeting their obligation. So, the final point on TDR, we recognize the concern. We wanted to bring it to their attention because it's sort of twofold. It's the obligation itself, and then it's also the bonus unit that COA are now introducing in these rounds. And our concern is that this will really make receiving areas very difficult for us to achieve. It's one thing outside of the Highlands Region area in those seven counties, but certainly in the planning area, it's going to make it far more difficult for us anywhere within the region, and we recognize that. So if we can clarify the TDR portion, and I could work with Jeff to clarify that portion, but we did believe that we captured in other areas the need for the plan to dictate, and in fact we've been working on, I know the council had said that they wanted a build-out analysis, so what does this plan, what is the effect if it is implemented? And staff have been working on that, and we will be delivering to you before adoption of plan, ready for adoption, upon adoption of the plan, a build-out analysis that looks at it from the perspective of if just the preservation area where it's mandatory, and then looking at it, preservation and planning area, if the regional master plan was implemented, what is the effect of that? And we're working at the same time in looking at what COA has done in terms of what the numbers look like, because we would be indicating the towns would be planning to, and the build-out would be that we would provide, because that really allows for the capacity constraints and the resource constraints that are reflected in our regional master plan.
I'm glad that you recognize some of the concerns I have, but I think it's critical that they be stated explicitly in here, because it is not explicit, it's very implicit in the language in here. And I don't think we're doing our job if we wait for these rules to be adopted without those critical comments, and then we try and work out an MOU to get around it. And again, who if not us to comment on what I will call a disconnect between the COA rules and our plan. And I think, you know, it should be a critical statement, not criticizing when I say critical, but critical of what the implications of the proposed rules will be, and stating the need for changes in these rules. But I'm glad that it's been recognized that some of the concerns.
I was just going to say, I anticipate there being a lot of conflicts between the regional master plan and the COA regulations going forward. There is no way we can get around this, and we're going to have to maybe dedicate some meeting time to just discussing the ramifications of this. You know, if a town has a 1,000-unit obligation, fair share obligation, and they come into conformance, and the lay of their land is such that there's almost nothing there to be developed, are we going to help defend that town against their co-op? We don't have to talk about it now. It's getting late, I know, but there's just going to be an awful lot of issues.
Just without speaking to the letter itself, I just want to echo sort of what Mimi's saying and what Debbie's saying. And I think I shared this one idea, but I was very concerned with the comments of the executive director of COA in the newspaper that, worse to the effect of, that what's standing in the way of affordable housing in the region is the Highlands Act. And I think that you know, sort of reflecting my concerns a couple months ago about the commissioner from Commissioner DCA saying things to certain to the same end. These acts are co-equal. We do not need to deal with the ramifications of inappropriately recognizing the Highlands Act within the COLA rules. So as strong as we need to be, it should be a collaborative effort to work out an arrangement between the agencies, but we should not be playing second fiddle on this. We should not let these rules go forward in a way that put the towns into conflict with what we're trying to do.
Yep.
I don't think we want to fight that fight, and it's an illegitimate fight to have about providing housing for people, providing affordable housing in particular. Unless they're suggesting that they build them in wetlands and in forests and in open waters of the islands, I don't think there should be a conflict at all.
Would ask for direction, because March 22nd is the date by which we have to have our comments in. So we can certainly work on clarifying it, but I want to know how to work then with the council to get the approval.
This is an issue that really should have been addressed at an interagency subcommittee meeting. That's part of the problem here.
Well,
we have not met, and this is exactly the kind of thing we could have kicked around in that subcommittee and provided more direct direction to the staff, I think.
Well, I would suggest this, that you revise the language based on the conversation we just had, and why don't you circulate it by email to the council members, and anyone who has comments can get back to you that way.
Okay.
You can get it done by the deadline, since we're not meeting between now and then.
That's not violating the Open Meetings Act.
We're not voting on it. I mean, it's a staff letter, so we're advising the director.
Major,
on
what you're
thank you.
The information will be public.
Right, the letter will be public.
John, just very quickly, I just want to report that I've been working with Arlene, and I think it's fair to say that staff has been directed to continue the research on the Department of Ag proposal from the governor, and we're going to have a report of some nature for the next meeting, and I hope to circulate it with the Ag Committee and for some review. We haven't gone over all the mechanisms that we're going to do, so that we can perhaps discuss it as a council on the meeting on the 27th.
There are other comments from council members before we get to public comments? We've had public comment on everything we've discussed today, but that's all right. Are there any public comments at this point? Mm-hmm. Mr. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My name is David Shope. I have a farm in Lebanon Township. Pursuant to your instructions at the last meeting, I went to my municipality asking for forms for me to get into the TDR program. They didn't know what I was talking about. The township is Lebanon. They searched their computers for about 15 minutes, found out about Chesterfield, et cetera, et cetera. But I have no forms to get into the TDR program. Is the council going to respond in writing to the comments that have been submitted on the master plan? We
will have a comment and response document to go with when we got the plan that summarizes the comments we received and how we are addressing it, or why we're not addressing it in the final plan.
Okay, but you're not going to respond to them as DEP did under regulations, point by point. The answer, I guess, is no.
Well, I'm not sure what DEP. We're not going to be writing letters back to each commenter, but we will be summarizing the comments we received and indicating how we are addressing them. So.
Okay. Well, what DEP did is they published them in the New Jersey Register.
The plan is not a regulation, so it's a slightly different legal process. But our intention is to try to explain what comments we received and what changes we made as a result of those comments
in writing.
You're correct. It's a response, comment response document.
Right. Okay. Water deficit. You should stop using that term. There's no water deficit in the Highlands Council. For you to parse out a HUP 14 area and say you're withdrawing more water than you're putting back in is a fallacy, because you're not considering the surface water at all. I just went to a Water Supply Authority meeting where they increase the allocation to Roycebrook Golf Course to 67 million gallons a year. of which 60.7 million gallons is consumptive. They irrigate 440 acres with this water. So I really don't want to hear about water deficits when DEP says this kind of water allocation to one golf course is okay. And the natural, I also was somewhat amused by the three council members that had to recuse themselves for a perceived conflict of interest when two of your water and natural resource committee members are paid environmentalists. And when I asked the question as to whether a quorum was required in a subcommittee, and the answer I found was no, and then magically the committee grew to you and Scott Witnick. And then we're talking about, basically, we're talking about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. And it's just a, and these people recuse themselves that were sufficient for themselves, but I really think it's silly, but particularly when you consider the specific interests and the specific paychecks by some of the members of your council. So I hope you don't waste any more time on this. That's all. Thank you.
Hi, Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I am reviewing the COA rules, and I have not completed this process at all, but I'm looking at some of the background documents and an assessment by like where they got their population figures. It appears that they've taken some very high growth periods and extrapolated in terms of number of housing units. They've taken, you know, the mid-90s and then just kind of drawn up, even though the curve has already gone down. And also the basis on which undeveloped available land was computed is extremely generous, I would say, to say the least. They did incorporate the new flood hazard rules, but they have not incorporated the new water quality management rules that are still pending but are fully fleshed out at this point. They come up with huge amounts of available undeveloped land all over the state, and I believe the preservation area is excluded, but the planning area is not. And the criteria are incredibly broad. So I hope that you might consider addressing that aspect. I'm sure there's a lot of other things to be addressed as well, but that'd be a good question.
I'll be brief, and thank you. I was also going to mention two things in the COA rules that I think you need to take close attention to. And the first is Jeff Tittle, Sierra Club. Thank you. The first is that in one section they talk about presumption of validity for inclusionary zoning projects that are in planning areas 1, 2, centers, or sewer service areas. And I think that is something that you need to comment on, because many very bad sites within the Highlands will fit that definition, places like a Windy Acres or Milligan Farms or many other of these bad projects. And there is no mention of if those areas and how they conform to the Highlands plan, if any of these sites are actually in forest preservation or some other environmentally sensitive area. So I think that's something you need to take a very close look at, on how they're going to look at those towns and with potential sites that may be there or may be languishing for a long time. So I think that's first. And the second is on the numbers. And one of the towns that I, you know, looked at was Ringwood, which has a number of about 120. And yet, in the last 3 years, they've only built 32 houses over the last three-year period. And one of the things that I've gotten from talking to staff was this idea that they looked at existing development patterns and vacant land. And all of Ringwood is in the preservation area, so I don't know how they
figured it out, except for they looked at some of the one-acre zoning that took place in town for a long time and just extrapolated out based on vacant land. So I think that's something you really need to take a very close look at and to make sure that these rules, you know, do not undermine the Highlands plan or come up with numbers that are so large where these towns won't be able to deal with them based on, I think, bad information and turn around and get sued and end up having a constitutional crisis that could, you know, really undermine Highlands preservation. So, anyway, thanks.
I'd just like to make a comment. You know, I'm asked about how did this occur and about deriving their land availability numbers, and they used essentially Mark IV data, the tax data, and they picked out what had a code saying it was vacant land. But that vacant doesn't always reflect the fact that that's been bought up for open space or, you know, green acres property. So, you know, I don't know how accurate their estimate are right now.
Yeah, I just want to, there are three properties that they had included in their vacant land adjustment that are actually under contract with Green Acres and Ringwood, so I know that for a fact. They also looked in some areas at the overall pattern and on vacant land, and they were actually picking up properties that were fairly large with a house on it that couldn't get re-subdivided, and they were picking up numbers that way as well, so I think the vacant land numbers are fairly, unfortunately, we don't have as much vacant land as COA says we do.
Great.
Good evening. Dave Pfeiffer from the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. I look forward to an ongoing dialogue about impervious surfaces, and we will love to participate in that. Two ideas that came to me today listening to the discussions, and these are off the top of my head. On the subject of call-up provisions, when the council calls up an action of a committee, I think you should reserve that for matters that are really serious, that are really matters of weight. One of the things that you might do is to look at any situation where the committee cannot agree, so that you are the arbiter of a disagreement at the committee level, and that there be unresolved findings from the committee before a call-up is triggered or triggerable. And then secondly, make the call-up provision a supermajority vote of the council, so that you're not having people individually call up applications for whatever reason. You should trust your staff, and you should trust your committees, and you should make decisions quickly and efficiently wherever possible. But you do need to recognize that sometimes you're going to get at loggerheads, either at the staff level or the committee level, and that the council's job is to divide the baby. So please think about raising the bar for call. Another issue that came up this evening on the Mount Arlington application was the definition of public health and safety. I happen to believe, because I know that area, that that was a wise decision that you made. However, the representations of public health issues were pretty thin, if you go back and look. There are procedures used by EPA and DEP to determine these kinds of situations that you might want to investigate. A certain percentage of failing septics, a certain number of contaminated wells, some objective findings other than saying 32% of the phosphorus load in Lake Opatcong is coming from the septic system somewhere around that lake. That's pretty thin soup. And the other thing is that when you do, for public health and safety reasons, allow an expansion of sewers into the preservation area, that you ought to require some findings that there's some growth control built into the physical structures being proposed. If someone wants to lay in a 24-inch diameter pipe to serve 10 houses, something's up in the future. So in this particular case, we had a fairly low number of houses, but we don't really know what could continue to happen on those lots. in the future. And you might also, at that point, look for some kind of restriction to keep that area from continuing to grow, either in the form of a conservation restriction or something. But I think the most important way to look at that is to look at the physical proposal. Are the pipes oversized? Are the pumps too large? Is this system designed to relieve this actual problem, or is it designed to program an area to grow? We went through this back in the good old days when federal money was around, so there's no need to go through it again. Thank you.
I think Mr. Piper's been hacking in my email because I raised exactly the same questions.
I don't even know how to do that.
Yeah. So he says.
All right. Well, we meet next on March 27th at 10, and again, save Thursdays on your calendar after that, and we'll try to schedule some more meetings. And thank you all very much. I guess we need a motion to adjourn.
Debbie,
yes.
Some kind of